Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sherry K.B., and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Friday, November the 1st, 2019, and this is our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're at Chapter 5, page 65, in How It Works, starting with the third paragraph beginning with, "We went back through our lives." And we'll be reading this one paragraph only, and it ends on page 66, "Our moments of triumph were short-lived." We'll be commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are Gracie D. for the 12 Steps, Don B. for the 12 Traditions, and the readers of our text are Julie E.B., Jordan L., and Darian K. Our newcomer greeter today is Janice P.M. and Reggie O. for our announcements. And Lynn S. is nice to get us started and get us recording and stop the recording. Thanks, Lynn S. The share ID for yesterday, Thursday, October 31st, 2019, our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 13601. That's 13601. And the share ID for this morning's Friday, November 1st, 2019, our 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 13603. That's 13603. The OA Preemblem. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You, Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Gracie D. to read our 12 Steps. Good morning, Gracie.
Good morning, Terry. This is Gracie D. in Southern California, a grateful compulsive eater. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Gracie D. Don B., you'll be reading our 12 traditions this morning. Good morning, Don B.
Good morning. This is Don B., recovered in Southern California. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, and I pass.
And thank you, Dawn B., for your service this morning. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except for the speakers should be muted. That includes the mute button on your phone, so please use star 1 to mute and unmute your phone. We appreciate that. That way we have a nice quiet meeting. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 65 in the fifth chapter, How It Works, and we're going to be on the third paragraph this morning. We're going to be reading, We went back through our lives. And will Julie E.B. read, please?
This is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in a nice cold Colorado this morning. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that the world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong were as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us, and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Well, I'm Julie, gratefully recovered today. This paragraph has been a key part of my spiritual experience. It's probably one of the ones I use the most with myself, and that I use the most sometimes when people call. The world and its people are often quite wrong. Check. Should a little girl have to grow up in a house where everybody is screaming and mom is depressed and doesn't come out for days and weeks and months at a time? No. Should tragedies happen? Should my children need to go through, you know, traumatic brain injuries, a lifetime chronic anxiety and depression? No. Check. The world and its people are often quite wrong. Should the person that from the cable company be excited to talk to me when my cable's broken and I'm venting my feelings? The world and its people are often quite wrong. And from some of my other work, I've learned that blame is one of the most unhelpful and really not useful. It's not even so much an emotion as a mechanism to discharge fear and anger. So here's what I would do. I'd figure out who's to blame. If they're to blame, then I'd do what the book calls a brainstorm or a talk storm. I call it talk storm, talk to a friend about how wrong everything was. I would call a sponsor in another program for 5 years before I found this program and tell them how life was doing me wrong. Well, and otherwise, I'd feel remorse. I'm a crappy person. I'm a bad person. I'm a horrible person. I make mistakes. I messed this up. I said the wrong thing to this kid. I did the wrong thing at this workplace. And so maybe I deserve what's happening to me. And life was just in this way happening to me. But when I enter in the fourth step and I start with the acknowledgement, hey, the world and its people are often quite wrong. People shouldn't have to lose their house in fires or face violence every day or not have enough food to get through the day. People maybe shouldn't be have to face down terrible addictions and deal with the problems that we deal with. But the fact is, once I got past that, I had a gift. It says, when I stay in that place of blame of others or myself, I stay sore. That's as far as most of us ever got. In 47 years, that's as far as I ever got, staying sore. But the big book says there's a solution. When we're sore and we look at our part and what we can do and how God loves us anyway, as I like to say, I'm the problem, God loves me anyway, then there's something different that begins to happen. And I begin to see that all of these resentments have me in common. Some of the things I set up and try to do differently, but have a forgiving God if I don't. Some of them, they're just based on a fear that got planted in me long ago. But if I depend on my higher power instead of other people, places, and things, I can get through. Thanks for letting me share. In a day when the world and its people are often quite wrong, mm-hmm. I don't have to be sore today. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Julie B., for getting us started. Okay, so we are in Chapter 5, How It Works. We're on page 65, the third paragraph. We're going to comment on that one paragraph only. And it starts with, I lost my thing. I'm losing it today, folks. Sorry. We went back through our lives, and we're going to read that one paragraph. It ends on top of 66, ending with, our moments of triumph were short-lived. Who would like to comment on this page?
Freya H.
Roz.
Jackie H.
Lydia T.
I'm sorry. Did Roz. I hear Roz G?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. I heard you, Jackie H.
Lydia T.
I heard somebody before Jordan L. Who was that, please?
Lydia T.
Lydia T. Okay. All right. And I can take one more.
Donna B.
Donna B. All right. We have our lineup. We have Freya H., Roz G., Jackie H., Lydia T., Jordan L., and Donna B. Freya H., please go ahead, and Roz G., you'll follow. Freya, good morning.
Good morning. This is Freya. Can I be heard? Can you hear me, Sherry?
I can, Freya. Thank you. Hello? Freya, star 1 to unmute, please.
Okay, am I unmuted now?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. Freya H., really grateful, compulsive eater of bulimic in Colorado. The line that I wanted to share on in this paragraph is that it says, the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seems to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. And that really jumps out at me because I spent my whole life in self-will trying to get what I want and arrange things to go my way and living in this delusion that, oh, if only things would just, you know, if only things would stay put, if they would just go the way that I, you know, fantasize and imagine they'll go in my head, then I'll be happy. You know, like it'll be like winning the lottery. Everything's going to fall into place and then I'm going to feel the way that I want to feel. And it never worked, you know, and just this line describes that. It says, even when I got my own way, it didn't work. It didn't give me that, you know, on top of the world, everything's going my way feeling, you know. And sometimes I had, you know, it says our moments of triumph were short-lived. And sometimes I did get some satisfaction when, okay, things went my way, people fell in line, but it was short-lived and it gave me this phenomenon of craving, this idea that like, okay, I got a little bit of satisfaction. I want more. So next time I'm going to work harder, you know, just the way that it's described in this book. So I love just reading this and being able to relate and saying, oh yeah, I can absolutely relate to this. But it took me a while to really accept that this is, you know, that this applies to me, and to see that my way really doesn't work, because I had to have the clarity of mind to kind of step back and get the big picture and recognize, first of all, that I was living in restlessness, irritability, and discontentment, you know, even in abstinence, even in program, that if I didn't change my approach to life, I wasn't, you know, I was going to continue to live in fear and anxiety. But first I had to recognize that the way that I was living wasn't just the way that everyone lives. You know, I didn't even realize that's what I was living in. So anyway, love getting to read this with all of you, and I will pass.
Thank you, Freya H. And Roz G., you're up, followed by Jackie H. Good morning, Roz.
Good morning, Sherry and everybody. This is Roz G. I'm a compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California. I'm out walking my dogs if there's any background noise. Well, I just wanted to focus on the remorse part. And in the in our nightly review, I believe it says that we're supposed to, you know, be weary, be careful of being in self-remorse. And we're supposed to ditch that quickly, because I beat up on myself. I felt sorry for myself. And all that was a reflection of how I was just thinking about me, myself, and I. And, you know, I've been told that, you know, God doesn't make junk, and that I was fearfully and wonderfully made. And like the previous shared, you know, one of them was that, you know, some of us grew up in atmospheres that, you know, weren't so great, and it wasn't really our fault. And, you know, both of my parents were drinkers, and I had a perfectionistic sister, and I was always comparing myself to others and not being good enough and not being thin enough and not being enough. And of course, all of the other things, you know, people didn't do it my way. Oh, what a miserable existence for many years. And, you know, today I have been those two key steps, the morning review, you know, the morning meditation, the nightly review, rope me back into reality. And that is, you know, I am a child of God. I am not perfect. One day at a time, I am abstaining from compulsive overeating, thinking about others, being of service, doing the best that I can, taking the next indicated step, asking for help. All of those things bring me back to being a human being. And I think I'm a pretty good person. So thank you. And with that, I pass. Happy Friday.
Thank you, Roz G. Jackie H., you're up, followed by Lydia T. Jackie, good morning.
Good morning, Sherry. Thank you for your service. This is Jackie H., recovered in Colorado. I'm so glad to be here. So glad to be reading this. I love this paragraph. It certainly applies to me. And I was a producer of confusion, and I was always in collision with somebody or something. And the last little paragraph, or the last little sentence, as in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. As I read this morning, I remembered how I used to feel, that because I was in collision with someone or something, and always having to be right, and they blaming. I would win. There were times I would win. I could strong arm myself into winning. But there was something inside of me, that is the goodness inside of me, that did not feel good. It felt icky, and I never did feel like I won. I felt horrible. And what I want to talk about is that, you know, there's principles that goes with each of these steps, and the principle that goes with step four is courage. And I used to think I was courageous, and but in my courageousness, it was not about being courageous at all. I was playing small, number one, and I really took pride in the fact that I survived. I did survive a lot of crap. I did. And I called myself a survivor, but I was playing small. And doing this work, you know, this takes a lot of courage to do this step. And I have such respect for myself and respect for the people that do this, because it is not a small task. And today I am playing big, and I don't consider myself a survivor. I thrive. I flourish and I prosper. And it's because I'm starting to tell the truth to myself and to other people about what's really going on in there. And I'm starting to unravel things. The things that are not true about myself are all the ego, all the character defects. That is not the true essence of who I am. That true essence of who I am is love. And as I'm doing this work, I'll do the fourth step and uncover all this stuff, discover, and then lay it aside, discard it. Then all that's going to be left is the true essence of who I am, and that is love. And you know what? That may take a lifetime or many lifetimes to happen. It will be. It's not going to happen. But today I'm awake, and I'm courageous, and I own the power of God in me. And I will close. Thanks.
Jackie H. And Lydia T., you're up, followed by Jordan L. Good morning, Lydia.
Hi, this is Lydia T., recovered compulsive overeater in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan this morning. Very cold out there today. This paragraph to me is it just describes my whole illness, my whole disease that I lived for so many years. And it was hard for me to move forward and till I got to this point with my sponsor and realized that the common theme in all this was me. I had trouble with a coworker. I had trouble with a physician I worked with. I had trouble with another woman who worked in another department. And the common denominator was me. And I believe they probably were wrong what they did to me. But that was as far as I could get. And so I stayed sore, and then I had to eat because I didn't know how to get rid of that feeling. And I crave ease and comfort. So I either was trying to fix it, be a people pleaser, or I was medicating myself. And it wasn't until I, looked at my part, cleaned up my side, and made amends to all of those people, I can hold my head up high. And, fortunately, I don't work with them anymore, because I'm in a much better place. My own self is in a better place, and my work environment is a better place. And it's just, I feel so blessed every day to go to work. And if I run into any of these individuals that I had such problems with, I can say hello and I can be okay. And they don't hurt me anymore. I don't allow what they did to me 10 years ago to hurt me. I allowed things to hurt me that happened so long ago. I mean, I would remember exact details. I was so good at holding these resentments. I could say I was great at that. So I didn't have any trouble when I got to this step, knowing what my resentments were. It was pretty easy to know what it was. And thank God for this program, and thank God for my sponsor who took me through and led me to the point that I saw that it was me. I was the problem. And now today, I don't have those problems. And if I do, when I do my 11th step at night, I can say, oh, geez, and I can apologize right away. I can clean up my side of the street, or better yet, I can realize it right when it's happening and clean it up. So then when I do my 11th step, I can recognize that it happened and I already took care of it. And I don't let these things build up, because if I let them build up, that is when I will, you know, then I will eat again. And to eat is to die. And I don't want to be there. So I practice this every single day to the best of my ability with my higher power guiding me, because I know I haven't done this on my own. It was not me. Because if I could have done it, thank you. If I could have done it on my own, I would have a long time ago. So thank you all so much. Have a wonderful day.
And thank you, Lydia T. Jordan L., you're up, followed by Donna B. Good morning, Jordan L. Star 110 mute, please. Jordan? Are you there? Jordan? Okay. Donna B., why don't you go ahead and we'll see if Jordan will come back in. Donna, good morning. Donna B.? Can I be heard? Donna B.?
Yes, yes.
Oh,
you can be heard.
Yes,
okay,
you, heard.
Donna.
You can be heard.
This is Donna. Should
okay,
I speak for
Donna,
Jordan
why don't you go ahead and we'll pick back up on Jordan now. Thanks, Donna B.
Okay.
Good morning.
This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater in Denver, Colorado. I only had one contact in my eye when you called my name. So I apologize that I had to get the other one in, or else I would have been entirely useless. I, too, wanted to hone in on the line, the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. And it reminds me, I recently went through the beginning of how it works with a sponsee, and the line that really resonates with me, she begins to think life doesn't treat her right. She decides to exert herself more. Is she not a victim of the delusion that she can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if she only manages well? And I've joked for many years that on my tombstone it's going to say, she tried really, really hard. And as I, in my morning prayer and meditation, I say the third step prayer every morning, and I say the seven step prayer every morning, and I ask God to direct my thinking, because I need help. Of my own volition, I will push and I will push and I will push. I will be convinced that I know how everything should be, and that it is within my power to make everything align exactly the way that I want it to, not just for my own well-being, but for the well-being of the entire world, those that are close to me as well as those who are far from me, distant from me. I need God's help on a daily basis to remember that I am not meant to wrestle with the world, to try to make things go my way. I have the opportunity to abandon myself completely to God's care and protection, and that's not always easy to do. I've recently been willing to discuss with my therapist. In my lifetime, I had two breakdowns, and they were very difficult for me to talk about. Breakdowns where I wasn't sleeping for weeks on end, had to take leave of absence from work, had to get 24-hour care for my children because I was unable to provide it. And I often feel that I'm living on a fault line. It's been 9 years since my last breakdown, but the fear of that just feels so dense and so real.
Time?
That this, and with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna B. Jordanelle, did you come back on the phone yet? Okay. We're going to go ahead and take some more names. Just reminding you, we're on page 65, paragraph 3. Who would like to share?
Hey, Sherry, I'm here. Can you hear
okay,
me?
Okay, Jordanelle. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Sorry about that. My name's Jordan L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. I really appreciate all the shares so far. You guys hit the nail right on the head. The longer I'm here, the more I belong, if you know what I mean. So anyway, I too just wanted to sort of focus in to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. And that was as far as I was able to get, which meant I was right. But I got to a point in my life where, like, being right, it wasn't cutting it. It wasn't fulfilling. It wasn't purposeful. I'd be right, but I'd be alone. Because I had pushed everyone away, proving them wrong. So it just, even if you're right, it doesn't mean a whole lot if you're all alone, right? So I was grateful to come in here and learn that I was sore. And even though I felt really broken, I felt quite unfixable when I got here. The longer I stayed and the more that I dug into this work, the more I saw that I was just sore. And the great thing about a sore is that it will heal, given time and air and sunshine and all those wonderful healing elements in life. So glad to be on the line with you guys this morning. That's all I got.
Thank you, Jordan L. Okay, so let's take some more names here. We're on page 65, paragraph 3. Who would like to share this morning? Who would like to share? Jump in. The water's warm.
Patty T.
I'm sorry? Something C?
Patty T.
Oh, Patty T. Good morning, Patty T. Okay, yes. Who else would like to share this morning?
Des M.
Anne-Marie G.
Something T.
Anne-Marie G.
Anne-Marie. Okay, got to Anne-Marie T.
Thanks.
Sure. And who else? We've got three more. Okay, come on. Jump
Robin
in Jones. Here. I'm sorry?
Robin Joe B.
Robin Joe B. Gotcha, Robin Joe B. And who else? Room for two more. Come on in. We'd love to hear from you.
Madeline P.
Madeline B.
Yes.
Gotcha, Madeline B. Okay, one more. We'll have a full house. One more. Okay. All right, we'll just go ahead and get started then. Patty T., you're up, followed by Des M. Good morning, Patty T.
Hi, thank you, Sherry. Good morning, everybody. This is Patty T., recovering in Southern California. And, you know, this to conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. You know, most people don't wrong me. I wrong myself. I am so into self as a natural part of my personality. I am in self-righteousness. I am in self-pity. I am in self-denial. I am in self. And to see that the world is not fair, just, you know, absolutely, in my diseased mind, confirms that I am not okay, that I am not enough, and that everything happens to me. Self. And I heard on this line, you know, somebody was talking about anger once. Maybe it was a special edition, but a woman said, how right do you want to be? Do you want to be right or do you want to be recovered? And that really stuck with me. You know, I made a mistake at work the other day, trying to be perfect, and it was a costly mistake for my attorney, and I felt terrible all of the self-loathing and all of the, you know, you're incompetent, you're good, all that stuff came up. And I had to honestly look at what that was, and it was all of that self stuff. You know, I kept thinking, I feel so bad for him. But the fact of the matter is that I felt bad for me. I felt bad for making a mistake. And, you know, one of the great things about this process of taking that inventory is finding that opening that allows the God spirit or the God thing to come in. And at the end of the night, when I was leaving, I was like, again, I'm so sorry, blah, 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 I apologized. And he wrote back, it's okay, mistakes happen. Don't lose any sleep over it. And I, you know, like, and the next morning, and I didn't sleep well, but then the next morning, I was driving into work, and I looked to my right, and there was a deer nibbling grass in the park as I passed. And then I got a voicemail message from another fellow who said, I love you so much. And, you know, like, this program and this process just opens me up to the truth. Because I don't know the truth. My head tells me lies all the time. And that's all I've got. Thanks for letting me share. I'll pass.
You, Patty T. Des M., you're up, followed by Anne-Marie T. Des, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Sherry KB. This is Des M., recovered compulsive overeater here in Southern California. I am really grateful to be on the line this morning and so grateful that we're right where we are in the book. There's many things happening in my brain and heart right now, so I think what I'm going to share on is just that I completely relate to openness and shame and fear, and it's all wrapped up in this paragraph with a solution to it. You know, the fear, what popped out at me is the last sentence, as in war, the victor only seemed to win, only moments of triumph were short-lived. And the seemed isn't italicized, and it popped into my head, false evidence appearing real. Like, that's what my fear is. Life seems really scary. It seems that I need to take control. It seems like I'm not agnostic because I believe in this giant universal God. But when I'm trying to control big things in my life, like creating humans or work or little things, like what task should I do next? Like, luckily I have this beautiful sponsor that took me through the steps quickly. And a year ago, you know, she started really getting involved in vision, and because of her involvement and openness to her higher power, like, I get this gift. And a big thing that I'm taught from working these steps, doing this four step, is just, God, what would you have me be? And I'm, if false evidence is appearing real, then I can't be present. So what I get is the gift of doing this inventory that I can be present today, and I'm have the day off, and I'm, you know, doing the dishes, and I'm like, higher power, what would you have me be next? And I've been really in self this week, and the past couple of days I've did probably about 6 inventories, and I just scheduled with a willing fellow to do another 10th step after this meeting, and I am experiencing that openness and that freedom that our book promises us. The book doesn't promise us that we're going to be in the fourth dimension every second of the day. It promises moments of ease and comfort. But I was reminded this week, I will never get if I go to my alcoholic foods. That's never going to happen, ever, ever. But I will, and promise that I get moments. I'm so grateful. Thank you again for your service, Team Friday, and have a beautiful day.
Thank you, Desim. Anne-Marie T., you're up, followed by Robin Jo B.
Hi, this is Anne-Marie G. from Pennsylvania.
Well, thank you, Anne-Marie G. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, everybody, for your wonderful shares. I'm getting so much out of it today. I love the inventory. It is my salvation. Having done it for a long time or for many years, it's finally come to the point where it's really helpful, and I'm beginning to see more and more with the help of others exactly where these fears are, what the causes and conditions are. But the word that stuck in, that seemed to stand out to me today was usual. You know, the usual outcome. Well, the usual outcome for me was carrying these things to bed with me at night, the fears and the my wrong conclusions about people, places, and things, and waking up with them in the morning, and then usually have to get back on the same train and continue the day in that mode. It was the most painful and the most horrible way to live, and constantly in and out of abstinence with the constant relapses. But today, it's a whole new world. I had an experience with a person that I wronged, of course, and worked out a different way with my higher power. Had a wonderful weekend as a result of that. And then this morning had a lovely message that said, just checking up on you to see how things were during our apocalyptic storm last night, which we had a very bad storm here last night in Pennsylvania. So I am so grateful that our moments, my moments of triumph, are not short-lived any longer. They're steady. Here and there throughout the day, there are moments of triumph, and it's really not my triumph. It's my higher power's triumph, so that I was able to submit to what this program suggests and to do it Vision Way, and it's remarkable. So thank you very much for letting me share.
Well, thank you, Anne Marie G. Thank you. Robin Jo B., you're up, followed by Madeline B. Robin Jo?
Yes. Good morning. This is Robin Jo B. from Missouri. Gratefully recovered by God's grace and for his glory. And step four was very pivotal for me also. I've been in another food program and did my first step four in it, and it was very, very intense. There was a lot of questions we had to answer and stuff. But what I realized, and I would have never, ever realized without the 12 steps, I would have never, ever, I would have died always believing that everybody hated me and that everybody, it was everybody's fault the way I was, and that I was righteous in my bitterness. I don't know what the term a chip on your shoulder, what that really, where that comes from, but I what I think of it is that it is a huge resentment that just you cannot get rid of. And I definitely had very big chips on both shoulders, if that's what it means. And it was just ridiculous. I hated everybody. I hated my immediate family, the kids in school that teased me and bullied me. I just felt like it was all everybody's fault. But, you know, I realized when I was doing that first fourth step that I could not really think of anybody that didn't like me. I really couldn't. The kids, they bullied me. Yeah, they're little kids. That's what kids do. My aunts and uncles, my mom, my dad, my own brother, they teased me about my chubbiness, but they loved me. They weren't trying to hurt me for the rest of my life. But I realized who really hated me, and was my worst enemy was myself. And I can remember just sitting there at the kitchen table and just crying and crying and crying, realizing that this was all my own fault, you know, that this was imagined or exaggerated, or it was from a little kid's perspective. And here I am, you know, and I was in my 40s then. Get over it, Robin, you know. And that was just such a huge, huge turning point. And I've done, I think, three three or four more fourth steps since that first one. And each time I learned something. I just did one here a couple months ago and was amazed at what I realized about myself and fears that I have locked down inside me that I hadn't, you know, acknowledged. Okay, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Robin Jo B. Okay, Madeline R. Madeline B, you're up. Yeah, Madeline B, star one to unmute, please.
Good morning. This is Madeline B, and I'd like to thank all of the speakers this morning for their wisdom and knowledge. It's meant quite a bit to me. The sentence, this world and its people were often quite wrong. When it was read this morning, I had a sudden reframing of my entire career. In my career, when I would go on a liquid diet and become very small, I would live out of grandiosity. I would tell people what to do. I had false confidence. I spent too much money on clothes. But then something would happen and I'd feel bad and I'd start to eat. And I would go on my way home and buy large quantities of food and just eat all night. And of course I would gain the weight back, and then comes the self-hatred and the cycle. And when I read this sentence this morning, I realized that I was the one who created the entire cycle, that only with God's help can I see at a level that I can't see at as an individual woman. And I can remember being in the bathroom at work at 60 years old and crying because my feelings got hurt. And I said to myself, when is this going to end for you? And it still has taken and is taking time to find a way not to blame people, but not to blame myself. So I'd like to thank you for letting me share, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Madeline R. And we have time for one more share. Somebody'd like to jump in.
Kathleen O.
You got it. Go, girl.
Good morning, Sherry. This is Kathleen O., recovered in Northern California, currently in Chile, Portland, Oregon. So this world and its people, I would like to change that for myself. This world and its people were always wrong. It was very frustrating spending so much time thinking I was right, everyone else was wrong, if only. And what a gift today to be recovered and realize that instead, I can choose to spend 99.9% of my day proving myself to be right, proving that other people are wrong, arguing, trying to control, trying to manipulate. What a waste of life. What a waste of energy. It took me a long time to figure it out, but coming into this program and working these steps, I finally figured it out. It's like, what a big aha moment. I'm not going to keep talking to them around all these people. So they're looking at me like, who are you talking to? So anyway, I could spend 99.9% of my day doing that, or I can live in these steps and be happy and be abstinent and be recovered. And it's a much better life. And we do have that choice. So make the choice. It's a godsend. Thank you, Sherry. I pass. Thanks for your service.
Thank you, Kathleen O. And that's about all the time we have today. I want to thank everyone on Team Friday, Gracie B, D, Don B, Julie E B, Jordan L, and Janice P M, Reggie O, and Lynn S, our recruiter. So thank you so much, everybody, for a great meeting this morning. And with that, we're going to ask Jordan L to read before we close on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer, Please read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only and keep you until then. Jordan L.?
Good morning. My name is Jordan L. Still recovered compulsive eater here in Crest Butte this morning, where it is 5 degrees and very cold. So our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.